Here he is. Wherever you want. I mean, don't sit way over there. That'll be weird. There's one area. You can sit in the middle. Whatever you want.
This is where? All right.
You had your own intro music. Did you know that was... Were you expecting your own intro music?
Yeah, I put together a walk-up list. Yeah. I wanted a lot of Migos for future.
Okay. I like it. Like, I'm sure... A lot of you, I don't know how many of you, I first heard about who Kyle was reading Jeff Passan's book, The Arm. How many people have read it? A few? A couple?
I'm going to tell Jeff. No one read
it. Seriously. Jeff thinks he's kind of a big shot, too. Like, he's a big Yahoo writer, and he wrote this big book on baseball, and this baseball crowd hasn't read it yet. Well, first of all, read Jeff's book. It's awesome. It's one of the best baseball books I've read. I would put it in my list of top three baseball books I've read. And not just because of Kyle's role in it, which, by the way, is incredibly interesting. Why don't you just start off by describing what it is you do and how you and Jeff first got to meet each other?
Yeah, I run Driveline Baseball out in Kent. We train a lot of pro and college athletes who work with Oregon State and Wake Forest and a bunch of teams, including the Mariners. Huge nerd, terrible baseball player growing up, so that's all I got to say about that. Just got into it. Like a lot of people, watch Moneyball or read Moneyball, and really like the idea of quantitative analysis of baseball. But a lot of it was from the player development side. So like, instead of finding Scott Hatterberg, let's develop that guy.
And so let's create Scott Hatterberg.
Right? Yeah. Why not? Right? There's got to be a lot of people who at least think like that, or we can teach them that way. And so in Jeff came up, you know, we started working with guys like Trevor Bauer and a few others, and then Jeff reached out by email and grilled me pretty good. And he's a tough interview, as you know. He's a tough guy to kind of impress. And so it was really a 2-year process. The book kind of compresses it into a pretty short time period. But Jeff was, for about 6 months, was making sure I'm not a fraudulent guy. And he does a really good job of making sure. His book really outlines that there's a ton of fraudulent stuff out there I'm pitching.
What has it done for business?
It's been good. It's been good and bad because Jeff is very honest, so I come off like a big jerk in the book, which is not unfair. I told him that everything in the book is correct. Yeah, I mean, true. It's true. So that's all that really matters to me. It's done okay. It's done well for business. It's good for segmentation because we're not trying to sell to everybody. We're trying to sell to the right people. We're trying to sell to the people that are high character and really want to train in our facility.
So what's the very what's the elevator pitch for what you do? What is the very basic premise for Driveline?
We're just the sabermetrics of player development. We're that side. We're trying to quantify why people are good and how we develop people. And usually that involves a lot of technology. But, I mean, it's just the quantification of not scouting and operations like it's been done on Fangraphs and Baseball Prospectus, but about the player development side.
All right. So I'm a young pitcher. I'm 22 years old. I've just graduated college. I'm hoping to make it, but I just don't throw hard enough. I throw 85 miles an hour, and I'm trying. But I'm 5'10". I just didn't grow enough. I'm trying really. I'm just not strong. Whatever it is, I can't seem to make myself throw harder than 85. And I know I've got good stuff. I can throw a curveball. I got a good slider. I even got a little changeup to get out lefties. So how do I throw 93 when I'm throwing 85?
Yeah, a lot of it is, we do a good job of, and our staff, who are a lot, are here. We find out, we'll put you through an assessment. We have a motion capture laboratory, weight room stuff. We have a ton of technology that will assess what the best way to get Mike Salk throwing 95 is. And it's going to be different for everybody. Maybe it's like a lot of weightlifting for you. Maybe it's a lot of weighted ball work for you. Maybe it's more mobility and stability. But our process at the ultimate level is to figure out what's the shortest way, the minimum effective dose, to get you from 85 to 95 in the safest way possible. Knowing that it's not totally safe, right? There's a lot of injuries that happen even at our facility. But we're trying
to... How many waivers am I signing at that point?
Well, that's a great question. We just got IRB approval for a new study. So you're going to sign a very large document.
I bet I am, yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's about...
Is my lawyer going to look at that before I do it?
Well, hopefully not. But it's about 12 pages, yeah.
All right, so you do your analysis of me. You have doctors? Are you a physical therapist? Who's looking at me to begin with?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. We have a doctor of physical therapy, a DPT who's on full-time staff. His name's Terry Phillips. He's from here. Published a lot of studies on lower back and arm injuries. We also have two manual therapists who work with the University of Washington who work part-time. And then we have an orthopedic on staff on our board of advisory. His name's Dr. Vin Santoro. He's up in Kirkland. So we have all that professional medical experience, plus most of our strength trainers are CSCS certified. And then we have biomechanists on staff as well.
All right, so now you've succeeded. I saw you for, what, a year? How long do I have to go before I can throw 93?
It depends on the person, obviously. That's a
I'm working answer. Hard. Come on, give me some credit.
Nine
I'm going to work hard at this.
Yeah, 9 months.
Months, gestation of a baby. All right.
Yeah, so let's say that you went to a really bad college and you didn't. They didn't develop you really well, like the University of Washington. We'll just go with that.
Whoa.
Yeah. Or Washington State. They're no good either. Or Oregon. Anyway, so
I wasn't in the Northwest, obviously.
You went to Oregon State.
All right, fair enough.
So
you've developed me. It's been 9 months.
Right. Yeah. Right. So you'd be 93, and then the best part is like our network is really strong.
Well, I was going to say, what do you do for me now?
So all we have to do is we have TrackMan at our facility, so we can say, hey, your curveball is actually really good. It breaks 20th highest in the majors. And
same TrackMan that I'm going to get it when I take a golf lesson tomorrow.
Yeah, basically the golf TrackMan's a little bit better, but yeah, essentially, so we can say, here's Mike Salk. His command's this. This is what he looks like. Here's his pitch profile as a TrackMan. The Mariners are really open to that. They've signed a lot of our guys. And then we can go from there and say, if for whatever reason you don't get a lot of traction, we have a lot of partnerships with independent baseball as well as summer teams. So just go throw a few innings. A lot of the scouts will want to see you throw, and then we'll go from there.
Trevor Bauer, one of your biggest success stories?
He sucks now, so no. I mean, he's interesting, right? Because his ERA is 6, but his xFIP is below 3, and his DRA is really low. So he has like this really interesting situation where his advanced metrics don't match. He's striking out more batters than ever, walking fewer, and giving up a million dingers. So what the reason is, it's kind of tough. He's a big success story because he was hurt in the lower half. He went from 88 to throwing really fast. And it's a success story for sure.
Who else is on that list?
A lot of Mariners guys, and so on and so forth, and just across. In the big leagues, probably Matt Boyd, although he was optioned because he stinks, so that's my bad. And Gaviglio trains at our facility, just started this year. A few others in the majors, probably blanking. We don't have any. Dan Altavilla, Andrew Moore, a bunch of the Mariners guys. Pagan uses our stuff as well. And then in the minors, we have quite a few players in the minors who are anywhere between an organizational player to a pretty good prospect.
So what's the conversation like with the team? I mean, because I've heard some of these stories of teams that will give people an opportunity to go to a group like you, or maybe even you yourself, and say, hey, before we release you, we'll give you a chance. We'll go pay for you to go do this and see if you can make it back.
That's literally exactly how it worked with the Dodgers.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah, I wasn't sure that you're allowed to say it was the Dodgers.
Oh, yeah. No, that's the greatest thing is, I can talk pretty freely. And even if I'm not supposed to.
So the Dodgers have this really cool deal, right, with their pitchers?
Yeah. They brought us in, Gabe Kapler, Andrew Friedman. I had known Andrew for a while with the Rays. Was a good opportunity with the Dodgers to say, here's 9 players, and let's try to put them through some their paces. Two of them ended up becoming exceptionally good players. Andrew Isler is in A-ball, doing really well, and then Corey Copping is in Double-A. Both pitched really well in the big league camp this year, and then both pitched really well in the Arizona Fall League. So you're getting these people that they signed for very little and are maybe they're future major leaguers or maybe they're trade bait, but they went from being released to guys that became pretty good.
So they release them and they say, all right, we'll pay for you to go do Driveline. Is that the deal?
Yeah, that particular one, we went there and did that, but then that's okay. Now the arrangement.
So the arrangement is, hey, look, thanks. Really appreciate it. You kind of topped out here in low A, high A, whatever it is. But we still like you, and hey, if you want to go take whatever the amount of money it is and spend it at Driveline, go do it, and then try out for us again at the end of it. Is that how that goes?
Yeah, pretty much. They get held back in extended spring training. So they said, we're going. You can sit here in purgatory in extended spring training, or you can go to advanced purgatory and see if we can get some. You're going to get cut. So let's try to figure something out.
So who's good at this? Which teams understand what they're doing? I mean, now we know the Huskies, the Cougs, and the Ducks are not good at this. How about in the pro game? Who's on the happy list and who's on the not so happy list?
Yeah, the top tier of teams, and we do a lot of draft consulting for our players. We have a lot of the Oregon State pitchers. Many of them will be first rounders, so we try to educate them on what teams are good. The S tier of teams would probably be like the Cleveland Indians and the Houston Astros would probably be very high. The Dodgers do a good job.
And what is it they do that's good? Why do you put them in that category?
They hire the Indians. There's a coaching inefficiency, I think. They hire a lot of college coaches who have just been fired, who have a lot of experience with StatCast, TrackMan, and they're young. They're usually in the mid-30s, late-30s, and weighted ball training. They have open minds, and so they say, hey, instead of working a terrible college job, why don't you coach A-ball for us? and they acquire that knowledge. Over years, that turns into a decent program, where instead of sending them to Driveline, the Indians are just like, in the AZL, we have this program, which is, you know, we feel really good about bringing guys back. And they can target players in bad organizations and say, like, hey, we like this guy. We think that we can develop a lot better than the Phillies did at the time, and then we can put him in the big leagues. That's what happened with Percy Garner, specifically.
So explain development in 2017. What does it mean to you?
You know, a lot of the teams are moving towards just better nutrition. Dave Cameron wrote about that, like, why don't teams have good nutrition in the minors? A lot of the teams are doing that now. Just paying attention to sports science.
I assume the answer is money.
The answer is
they're unwilling to pay for it.
I would say that it's more than money. A lot of it's inertia, right? Like, the idea is that the minor leagues are supposed to be torture. Like, that's a selling point of it, right? But, like, it doesn't... And so a lot of coaches buy into that. So they're actually very anti-weighted ball, anti-food, anti-sleeping in, because they think it makes the players soft, which is just not true. It's about, you know, developing them the best they can. Player development is not a thing for most organizations. It's herding cats. It's like putting all the players in all the six levels that they're at and just figuring out where 240 people are going to sleep every night. Like, that's what the director of player development usually does. It's not actual player development.
No, it's a logistical gig.
It is exactly logistical. That's exactly what it is. It's moving trucks and UPS. Like, those are the people that do that job best.
Hmm. How are the Mariners at it?
They are really good now. I'm a little biased, but we do some work with Seattle, in full disclosure, but I think Andy McKay is really good, the director of player development. He actually does a lot of player development and did with the Rockies. Jerry DePoto is awesome. His son trains with us, so we have to not fuck that up. Like, that's pretty important. His son is a closer at UC San Diego.
I'm kind of surprised Jerry himself isn't training with you these days. Like, have you seen Jerry and the kind of shape he's in?
He's awesome. And he,
like, I feel like if you could put a few miles an hour back on Jerry's fastball, he'd quit his job and go try to be a reliever again.
Yeah, like, one year, I think Jerry threw nothing, but he threw 100% fastballs one year. So, like, yeah. We talk about it all the time. So Jerry and I have a pretty good relationship.
So Andy McKay is different. Whether it's making him a good development guy or not, he is not like the other people who do that job.
No, he's a unique guy, right? Junior college guy, was a mental skills coach, not much of a pro coach at all. Went from that to immediately the Mariners plucked him out of the Rockies organization. And credit to Jerry and the ownership group to taking a chance on a guy like that, because he had no real relevant experience before he came over.
What do you think about mental skills? Because it feels very different from what you're doing. How connected is that?
Extremely, right? Because the players that we see are so often demoralized. They've been released, they've been injured, and a lot of that is psychological. And a big part of that is injuries, right? When people have Tommy John surgery, and the arm goes into that a lot. And Jeff Passan talks a lot about the psychological damage that goes into hurting yourself doing something that you love and is your job, and then when you come back and your velocity is not very good, then the separator is often the mental skills. And it's more than, professional athletes are not very good at admitting they need psychological help in general. So being able to frame that in such a way that doesn't hurt their fragile masculinity is a way that's, might be...
Do you have someone on staff who is, you have a psych person on staff?
Not someone that's dedicated. I think that there's a large opportunity there. But two of our strength coaches basically did that de facto at their colleges. So we definitely incorporated as best we can, but I think there's an opportunity to get better.
It's good stuff. Any questions from out here? Let's see if we can hit a few of the people real quick.
Yeah, right here in the back.
I lied when I said it was one-on-one. My bad.
That's all right.
Hi. Super interesting panel. I was wondering, is there an age floor for people who you work with at Driveline?
For whatever, there's a lot of high school politics in the area, so I don't want to get into too much of that, but travel balls really takes away a lot of the players that we would see. We primarily see college and pro, but we do have some 11, 12, 13-year-old kids that really they're not there to, like, develop velocity. They're there to just have a, get good skills, understand, like, what they should do going forward. We're sought out by a lot of parents of kids that are 13 or 14. There's a 14-year-old who throws, like, 90, 92. And so for that kid, like, it's bad. Like, coaches all over the country say stuff to the kid that is very disgusting. Like, we'll do anything to get you to our college campus. It's bad. It's bad. Anything you imagine, it's worse than that. And so for them, we try to educate them, like, the summer ball stuff doesn't matter. These trophies don't matter. Like, you're a potential, $2 million draft guy 4 years from now. So unfortunately, you throw very hard at 14, so you're going to be treated like you're 18. So how do you deal with that continuum? And so then that's what we do with a lot with the younger kids. It's more on the on the knowledge side. When the parents don't have a lot of experience in baseball, how do you treat that? It's not a baseball problem. It's now, you know, humanity's problem.
How many waivers did the 11-year-old sign?
All the time. We make him read, like, Grey's Anatomy. We make him just... Yeah, no.
I think you can actually be sued for having them read Grey's Anatomy, so be careful.
Yeah, well, you could have them sued for watching it.
Yeah, exactly. Let's be super careful. See if we can grab a couple more.
Questions from the back.
So go ahead.
Kyle, we're really impressed about your facility and your training program. I come from Taiwan. How can I get your clinic to Taiwan?
We had multiple Taiwanese people just at our facility. So there's... Our support team works internationally. We're lucky enough to have people that are dedicated to actually that specific question on how we can roll out equipment in Taiwan. There's a facility in China and one in Japan. There's an NPB team in Japan that uses our stuff. So we actually, if you just write into support, we have a lot of experience with using our stuff overseas. It was really more like the six minor league affiliates. Like how with the Mariners, how do we work this out at like Everett, Clinton, Modesto now, Northwest Arkansas, Tacoma? And that's the biggest thing when Andy and I talk all the time. Andy's sold on being able to do something like this together. Andy and I have talked about this for 2 years. We've known each other for five. And so it's like, it's not about us making any money or getting a relationship. How is this going to be successful in the long term? To give some juicy tidbits with the Dodgers, we had like a very noted blow up with them eventually. It's a good relationship now, but they poached one of our employees, which is fine. But it ended up being a very contentious thing because we have sports science or whatever, and it's no different than the sabermetric statistical revolution. It really is the exact same. We're like where Pete Palmer was in the 80s doing stratomatic baseball, trying to convince people that like weighted on base average and linear weights is a real thing. Right, Pete Palmer, the inventor of linear weights, didn't ever catch up until like 2006, probably with like, you know, various metrics like weighted runs created plus. I told you I was a nerd, by the way.
And then you proved it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So it's an interesting situation. Like, how do we roll this out in a more successful way? Essentially, player development in the big leagues at all the professional baseball levels is in like the mid-1980s, mid-1990s. And so if you remember the state of sabermetrics then, it basically didn't exist. So to put someone like Voris McCracken into the Red Sox, he was a colossal failure. But why? It's not because Voris didn't have good information. It's because that dealing with the people on the front line is a much different deal than dealing with Theo Epstein, right? So how do we get this to the level? I said on Twitter the other day, people think that the general manager is like, whatever he says goes. When I worked with the Astros, that was not the case. Jeff Luhnow said, we want to do long toss at every minor league affiliate. The pitching coordinator said, fine, we're going to do that. 2 weeks later, no affiliate did it, right? Because they have the ultimate power. So Luhnow fired all the coaches and hired new ones, but like that's a big pain in the ass. Baseball doesn't work in a normal business way. You have to start from the middle out and like actually approach both sides. It's pretty difficult.
I would totally disagree with you on that. I would say baseball functions exactly like all other businesses.
It functions like a dysfunctional normal business.
I mean,
yeah.
I,